If a Democrat wins the 2020 presidential election, Samantha Power would likely be on any shortlist for Secretary of State. Power was a journalist, a human rights activist, and a UN ambassador for President Barack Obama. She has a new memoir out. It's called The Education of an Idealist. In it, she comes across as an idealistic humanitarian, determined to right wrongs. I asked her where that impulse came from.
I was raised Catholic in Ireland and very early on learned, do unto others as you'd have done unto yourself. But I also tell the story in the book of my father, who died when I was very young. He was a drinker, and we grew up in Ireland till I was 9. And definitely, I felt like I was the person who was the closest to him. And in some level, some subconscious level, I think for much of my life, I felt I wasn't there for him and didn't manage somehow to get him to give up the drink and take care of himself. And of course, that's what a child thinks often, and it's a bit unfair on oneself. But maybe there's something in that as well that you then translate into your work life later on.
I ask it in part because a lot of your approach to foreign policy and the U.S.'s role in the world is that the U.S. has a special role to play and the U.S. can make a difference in people's lives overseas. And I know that that was a big impetus behind your strong push for intervention in Libya in 2011. You were a key voice in pushing for the U.S. to intervene. And 1,600 airstrikes later, Muammar Gaddafi is toppled. Some called President Obama's decision a personal triumph for you. It was framed as a response in many ways to an impending humanitarian disaster in Benghazi. I first want to play a clip of the president because he uses a lot of language that you use to justify the intervention.
Some nations may be able to turn a blind eye to atrocities in other countries. The United States of America is different. And as president, I refuse to wait for the images of slaughter and mass graves before taking action.
Now, at this point, Libya is a failed state. It has been for some time. And its collapse has sent millions of refugees to European shores. It's emboldened nationalists in Europe. In hindsight, was that attempt at a humanitarian intervention a mistake?
Well, first, let me just take issue with the idea that this was a personal triumph for me. I mean, using military force anywhere should be nobody's personal triumph. But we were in a situation where the entire world, including the Arab League, NATO, the UN Security Council, were pressing for something to be done to avert what looked like a surefire massacre. I think the challenge is, you know, when there are societies that are so ravaged from within as Gaddafi had done to the Libyan people, I don't think once the Arab Spring began in that country that you were looking at a potentially restabilized society. And so the decision before us was not, is Libya going to be put back together or is there any going back to the pre-Arab Spring moment, but rather, do we have a responsibility given the number of countries that are calling on us to act? So I guess I just question the premise a little bit, which is, had the United States not answered the call of the Libyans and of so many in the international community, would Libya look different today? Maybe. I mean, we can't run history a second time. But what we, I think, do know is that many, many people would have been killed in that first instance.
But I think what's a tough one about the Libya situation is that former Defense Secretary Robert Gates, he opposed it. Colin Powell has a saying, you know, you break it, you own it. I mean, at some point, don't you and the Obama administration own a part of the failure of Libya?
One of the things I try to do in the book is to bring people into the Situation Room and have them experience what it was like, including hearing Secretary Gates and his argument. At the same time, of course, Secretary Gates supported the invasion of Iraq and the troop surge in Afghanistan. And so I try to bring you into the room and have you make your own judgment. Absolutely, I think all of us have to ask ourselves, would Libya look better today had that not happened? Our challenge in the aftermath of NATO's action is that the Libyans said to us, we don't want any international presence on the ground, none. So I think Colin Powell's saying really does apply. You sort of break it, you fix it. But it was pretty broken at the point at which Gaddafi's forces were at the gates of Benghazi. And I suspect, had we not acted, the questions you'd be posing to me right now would be about why we didn't act in Libya and why tens of thousands of people were killed. It's just these are extremely vexing, wrenching challenges.
You mentioned Syria, and I want to move to Syria. At the time of the red line and chemical weapons, President Obama nominated you to become the U.S. ambassador to the UN.
One of our foremost thinkers on foreign policy, She showed us that the international community has a moral responsibility and a profound interest in resolving conflicts and defending human dignity.
You were very outspoken during your tenure at the UN. You were calling out the Assad regime in Syria and its Russian and Iranian backers.
You are plotting your next assault. Are you truly incapable of shame? Is there literally nothing that can shame you? Is there no act of barbarism against civilians, no execution of a child that gets under your skin, that just creeps you out a little bit?
I remember hearing you when you said that at the time. It's very passionate. In the end, President Obama decided not to attack Syria after the Assad regime crossed Obama's own red line and used chemical weapons. Why aren't you more outspoken in your book about your criticism of Obama's fateful decision?
I think I'm honest about it. Again, in light of the conversation we just had about Libya, it's extremely risky to be using military force in other countries. This was an instance where, as UN ambassador, I tried to help the president mobilize a large global coalition in support of what he was contemplating, which was very, very limited military action to punish the use of chemical weapons. So I experienced firsthand the lack of enthusiasm on the part of all the countries of the world, really, with the exception of France. But again, these are really tough decisions. And what I do in my book is bring people into those decisions and also explain President Obama's side of the story of what it would have been like absent strong domestic support, absent a global coalition, absent a UN Security Council authorization. The risks of doing something like that were not small.
I'm going to switch gears more to the present right now. If a Democrat wins the 2020 presidential election, you'd certainly be on a short list for Secretary of State. Are you interested in that job?
I'm interested right now in bringing my story of trying to make a difference to particularly to young people. I think a lot of people in the world have lost faith that they can do something in light of the magnitude of the problems we face, whether climate change or 70 million displaced people or, again, the Arab Spring starting and offering so much promise and then collapsing in so many places and so much heartache. We're facing and have been for years now a human rights recession around the world, and the temptation is to just say, oh, read another book, Why Democracies Fail, Why Democracies Die, 1984. But my feeling when I was ambassador and my feeling to this day is there's always something you can do. And really, I think more than anything, the lesson of the Arab Spring is stresses really the importance of political evolution rather than revolution, because once revolution occurs, what gets unleashed is beyond the control of most mortals.
Samantha Power is an author, a human rights activist. She was a presidential advisor and the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations during the Obama administration. Her new memoir is called The Education of an Idealist. Thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.